Happy Friday, everybody. Welcome to the Michael Cutler Hour. I am your host, Michael Cutler. Hope you've all been having a good week. Spring is in the air, and here in New York, certainly welcome respite from the crazy winter that we certainly experienced. So much for global warming, climate change, perhaps. I'm not sure what to make of it. Anyway, it's always great to join all of you at the end of the week to play the game of catch-up and look back at the events of the week. And with my background as a retired senior special agent with the INS, of course, to look at it through the prism very often of the immigration issue, because as I always like to point out, immigration is not a single issue, but rather a singular issue that impacts nearly every challenge and threat that America faces today. For those of you who are familiar with me, you know that I'm a retired senior special agent. My career spans some 30 years, done a bunch of congressional hearings. I rotated through all the divisions within the investigations branch. But rather than be, go on at my background, to save time, and time is always precious and a valuable commodity, I ask that you go to three websites, starting out with michaelcutler.net, one word, M-I-C-H-A-E-L-C-U-T-L-E-R, michaelcutler.net. Of course, my other website, talkborder.com. We've got some videos up there, including a video with one of my favorite members of Congress, Lou Barletta, and with my guest, who I expect will be joining me momentarily, Don Rosenberg from California. And finally, while we speak about California, I am also a senior fellow with an organization known as CAPS, Californians for Population Stabilization. They are located in beautiful downtown Santa Barbara, California. Great place to visit. Always love to get out there. Got great friends out there. Pleasure to work with these folks. Their wonderful website, capsweb.org, C-A-P-S, capsweb.org. And, you know, although the title of their organization is Californians for Population Stabilization, immigration is not simply a concern for what the politicians and open borders advocates would tell you are the four border states, you know, California, New Mexico, Arizona, and Texas. In point of fact, this country is a country of 50 border states, because any state that has a seaport or an international airport of necessity is a border state. This has been a very strange week indeed. For those of you who've been keeping track, I've actually done a bunch of TV appearances. It almost feels like what happened shortly after 9/11, when so many of the television programs were focused on the nexus between immigration and terrorism. Once again, the Boston bombing has brought immigration to the fore. Let's face it, the people that were involved with the attack were people who were born in Russia, came to the United States. The United States did the right thing, or at least we thought we did as a country, providing political asylum to the Tsarnaev family, which gave us the two dirtbag bombers, or alleged bombers. You know, let's be careful about our language. But let's face what we're dealing with here. The idea that anybody would ever do an act like that defies comprehension on my part. But to think that these were people who came to America and we extended ourselves as a country, as a people, demonstrating kindness and compassion, providing political asylum to the family, and then they repaid our kindness, generosity, and compassion by pulling off a horrific terrorist attack in Boston, wounding, I don't even know what the total number is, somewhere as close to 300 people, killing several, including an 8-year-old boy, a police officer, a Chinese woman who was here studying. You know, this outrageous act should sicken all of us, but it needs to be cautionary. And it needs to be cautionary from a couple of perspectives. And by the way, we then also find out that there are three supposed students, friends of the Tsarnaev brothers. Two of them were here on student visas and apparently violated the terms of their admission. Not unusual. We have at least 5 million such visa violators in the United States. And one of them is apparently, from all I can determine, a naturalized American citizen whose family came from Ethiopia. Perhaps he was born in Morocco, from certain things that I've heard. But again, we naturalize somebody and make them part of our country, give them the keys to the kingdom, as it were. And notwithstanding that, what we now have again are people that participated in the cover-up of this terrorist attack. But we've got to be cautious about understanding some issues. I want to get to that first. First and foremost, political asylum is important. It's important that the United States and other decent countries provide safe refuge to people whose lives are in danger, who face persecution because of race, religion, ethnicity, or political perspectives. We are at our best as a nation and as a people when we extend those protections to the truly vulnerable. A little bit of my own personal background. In the mid-1960s, ancient history, that's what happens when you get as much gray hair as I have, I was a student both in high school and college, and I was a B'nai B'rith president. B'nai B'rith, of course, is a Jewish service organization. And one of the things we did was to go to Washington and try to convince then-president Lyndon Johnson to go to the Russians and convince them to allow Jews and other religious minorities to leave the former Soviet Union, come to America, or go to other countries that would let these folks in so they would be able to practice religious freedom and they'd be able to experience true freedom from persecution and so forth. It was exciting to be part of it. In fact, I remember that we did a demonstration right outside the White House. We got a letter of support from the president himself, and back then, Dr. Ralph Abernathy, working with Martin Luther King, read a speech or a statement to us written by Dr. King supporting our objectives, goals, and desires for religious and total freedom for the downtrodden, which is really where we're at our best. It was wonderful for me as an immigration inspector to then close the circle by admitting some of those refugees when I first began my career with the INS as an immigration inspector. It was exciting for me. It was rewarding. You know, you kind of had the sense that, well, perhaps maybe my voice in part helped to get these people out of the tyranny of the old Soviet Union. And it was a wonderful thing. What we need to be careful of, however, is not to stop this kind of program, which I think is very important and very wonderful, but to make certain that we screen the people we let in. It's funny, there's a website that saw an interview that I did yesterday with Megyn Kelly on Fox News. Megyn did a great job. I've always enjoyed watching her. It was terrific. This is now my second opportunity to be on her program over at Fox. And we got into this issue about immigration fraud, how we're processing applications for immigration benefits, including the deferred action cases, the so-called Dreamers, people who purportedly entered as kids. Of course, there's no way of verifying anything. And because of the lack of resources and the lack of, concern, hard to understand, that USCIS, Citizenship and Immigration Services, they're not even doing face-to-face interviews. So we got into this discussion about how we have students violating their student visas by no longer being in school, getting readmitted into the United States after they drop out of school. Now, this isn't a matter of agencies not talking to itself. This is a matter of DHS components of one agency not working interoperationally. USCIS, CBP, Customs and Border Protection, and ICE are supposed to be under one roof, one organization. That organization, known as DHS, the Department of Homeland Security, although the way they do their job, I call it the Department of Homeland Surrender. So there was an organization that came out and made the point, well, Mike Cutler worked for the now defunct INS. Well, the agency may have changed, the mission and the laws have not. But that's typical for what you do when you have nothing else to do. You know, somebody once very sagely noted that when a lawyer goes into court, if he's strong on the facts and weak on the law, he pounds the facts. If he's weak on the facts and strong on the law, he pounds the law. When he's weak on both, he pounds the table. That's what they're doing. Mike Cutler, anti-immigrant, kind of a remarkable statement. My mother, may she rest in peace, was an immigrant. My dad's parents were immigrants. So many people close to me in my personal life came here from other countries or their families did. I'm not anti-immigrant, but I want to make certain that our immigration laws live up to their primary obligation. And, of course, that obligation is to prevent the entry of aliens into our country whose presence would be harmful to the well-being or the safety of America and Americans. The immigration laws at their foundation are supposed to protect American lives and the jobs of American workers. I'd love to know how it's anti-immigrant to simply say, look through the peephole before you admit a stranger into your home or your country. No rational person would fail to lock his door at night, especially if he was told that there were thugs roaming the neighborhood looking to break in and pull off home invasions. We know that we are being invaded by criminals and by terrorists who will see in America's kindness and generosity weakness. This isn't the first time. Some of the terrorists who attacked us in 1993, first at the World Trade Center, a dirtbag by the name of Kansi, a Pakistani national, applied for political asylum. Same deal, you know, please help me, help me. He lied through his teeth on the application, and while the application was pending, there's some question whether it had been adjudicated properly. He showed his kindness for us by standing outside the CIA with an AK-47 and opened fire, killed two CIA officers and wounded three others. So understand that what we were dealing with there was an example of an alien coming to America, asking for our compassion, and once we showed it, killed our people. Just 1 month later, the first attack at the World Trade Center, again, carried out by aliens who were admitted into the country. One of them, Mahmoud Abu Alima, got agricultural amnesty, purportedly because he was a farm worker. Chuck Schumer was the architect of that agriculture provision of the amnesty of 86. And the only thing this guy ever planted was a bomb in the garage of the World Trade Center. Schumer is at it again. Once again, we need farm workers. You know, let's look at it objectively. What was wrong about the 86 amnesty, and we could have a discussion about philosophically whether we should admit people and give them amnesty if they violate our laws and our borders. And you know, blanket amnesties concern me greatly because it sends a very wrong message, and we don't have the capability of screening all these people effectively, and we're also creating unfair competition for Americans who can't find good jobs. But it's also a matter of not enforcing the law. There's nothing in the bill that they're calling comprehensive immigration reform that addresses the idea of adding even a single additional agent. We have 7,000 ICE agents for all of America enforcing the immigration and customs laws and other laws, which means we have probably fewer than 3,000 ICE agents who are out there really and truly enforcing the immigration laws. To put it in perspective, New York is at a low right now. We have 35,000 police officers, down from what had been a high of 41,000. So realize that we have fewer than 10% as many ICE agents for all of America that New York has in terms of police officers to keep the city of New York safe and secure. So we really need to understand that the immigration system is about far more than securing the Mexican border, which, by the way, leaks like a sieve. There's no security there. Chuck Schumer and his other seven gangsters, whose capo is Alan Greenspan, who wants lots of cheap labor to come in, and hopefully they will occupy the houses Americans lost to foreclosure. He knows that the system failed, and he's giggling away, knowing full well that what he and the other seven gangsters are proposing is doomed to fail. It's a system designed to fail. What failed in 1986, what is failing today, is a lack of enforcement. You could give out a gazillion agricultural visas. And by the way, so that you know this, Mexicans are able to get agricultural visas, and they're usually processed within 1 day. There is no limit. So any Mexican farm worker who wants to come to America need only go to an American consulate office and say, I want to be a farmer. They will give him a visa. He can come and work. The problem is we don't make certain that they do work. Once they get here, they're free to, as they say in the airplane, feel free to roam about the cabin. They're free to roam about the country. So the farmers don't get their workers, but we get lots more illegal aliens. And incredibly, President Obama is back in Mexico, Mexico City, telling them that he wants their people to be able to become Americans here in America. Let's be real honest, folks. Illegal aliens who run the border, for the most part, do not want to become Americans. They just want to get their hands on American greenbacks. That's what this is about. And every year, this country is bleeding tens of billions of dollars in remittances, money that is wired out of our country, money that should be recirculated in our country by going to the salaries of Americans of every race and religion, of every ethnicity, going to the salaries paid to lawful immigrants so that the money gets spent and invested in America. It's not happening. And I can assure you that under comprehensive immigration reform, nothing will be done to change the equation except that there will be tens of millions of aliens who will easily game that process, get official identity documents, lawful status, adding to a labor pool that can't find adequate jobs today. And so it goes. Don, I appreciate you being with us. Don Rosenberg on the line. Happy Friday, Don. I thank you so much for joining me. Hello, Don. Don?
Oh, yes, he's out.
Can you hear me, Don? Don? Hello? Can you hear me? Well, we had this problem once before. I don't know if Don can hear me. Don Rosenberg, are you there? Hello. Don, if you could hear me, you may want to hang up and call back in. Don Rosenberg, are you there? This is kind of like the movie Lost in Space. Don, can you hear me? Hello, Don. Well, I think Don is with us. I see his number up on my board, but I don't think I'm able to hear him, or perhaps he's not able to hear me. I'm just not certain of that. I'm going to continue on, and hopefully we will get to hear from him. You know, Don has a horrific story. His 25-year-old son, Drew, was in law school and was hit by an alien who had been apparently illegally present in the United States. He was given temporary protected status. We're always protecting everybody but Americans, it seems. This guy was driving without a driver's license and had his car impounded. And then they gave him his car back in California and winds up running Don's son over multiple times and eventually kills him. Don's son was on a motorcycle, 25 years old, and a law student. I can't imagine a worse set of circumstances. And so we come back to this issue of why in the world do we have immigration laws in the first place, and what is it that we're supposed to be doing so that we can protect our own people from this kind of mayhem. And so, again, what we're looking at is an immigration system that's failing abysmally to live up to its obligations of protecting Americans. So I just don't understand where we go with that. Hang on one second, folks. Let me see if I can get Don on the line. Hold on. Yeah, as it turns out, my friend Don Rosenberg is in California, and for those of you who don't know, they're having a terrible fire out there not far from Los Angeles. I'll tell you, California is a wonderful place to live, but between the earthquakes and the floods and the fires, I think I like the East Coast better, especially at times like this. Hopefully he's okay, but he was just telling me on another line that they are getting heavy smoke right now from the fires. Not all that far, I guess, from where he is. Hopefully he will be joining me momentarily. Talk about circumstances beyond anybody's control. But again, what we look at in a case like what happened with Don Sundin, this isn't about vilifying immigrants, but it's about making a clear distinction. We need to make certain that before America does anything else, that we look out for the safety and well-being of the people who live in the United States. I think we've got Don on the line right now. Don Rosenberg, is that you?
That's me, Mike. How are you?
I'm okay. The question is, how are you?
Very smoky. Thanks. The fire that your listeners probably have heard about out here, the one in Camarillo, the wind has shifted, and my no danger at this point, but a lot of smoke.
Wow.
So I've run around closing windows and putting on air conditioning. And
Are you secure? Is everything all done? Are you secure? I don't want you to get yourself...
Oh, no, there's at this point, there's nothing I can do. The fire's far enough away. It's just the shift in the wind has blown the smoke this direction. So I'm safe, and I think we'll be okay, but I'll have to keep an eye out over the next couple of hours, I guess.
Wow.
It's always something.
Always something, and we've always got to be prepared, as they say to the Boy Scouts, be prepared.
Right, yep.
You know, you and I have become friends through some truly tragic circumstances. I value our friendship, but given how we came to be friends, I wish we didn't know each other. It all emanated from the death of your son, Drew. If you could, do you want to briefly just recap, and I know there's been developments with this bum who did this. So why don't you go ahead, Don,
and
just give us a quick recap, and let's go from there.
Yeah, well, the real quick recap for anybody who, you know, wasn't listening when I've been on before is that my son was killed by an unlicensed driver about 2.5 years ago in San Francisco. The guy was in the country on temporary protective status. He tried to flee, but as I've learned... After the accident. That's what actually killed my son, because when he first hit him, he was okay. But as I've learned over the last 2.5 years, immigrants into the country, be it legal or illegal, seem to have a little bit of protection around them. So the charges were dropped from a felony to a misdemeanor. He did get convicted last July, was sentenced to 6 months in jail, spent all of 43 days in jail, and then I spent 8 months fighting to get him deported. Actually, tomorrow will be the one-month anniversary. He got deported on April 4th. And he's gone, but I'll tell you, he's a bum, but the people who allowed him to do what he did, which is many politicians and police, are actually higher on my crap list than he is. I mean,
Deservedly so.
Yeah, I mean, you know, he obviously shouldn't have tried to flee, but it's not like he went out and said, oh, I'm going to kill somebody today. But these people, they put, you know, literally the gun in his hand, and he had been caught beforehand, and they let him go. And then, you know, what's interesting and what ties into, you know, everything that just happened in Boston is here's a guy who killed somebody, and that wasn't enough to get him deported. The DHS system fought me to keep this guy here. So here they had, by law, they had his two misdemeanors, which is enough to get him out of the country, but they've decided that, oh, well, we're not going to count driving without a license as a misdemeanor, even though it is one, and it kills over 7,000 people a year. And then it became, well, he has two misdemeanors, but they were in the same case, so we only count one of them. And it's just... it's crazy. So if they can't deport somebody like this, where the case is given to them, it's complete, all they have to do is say yes, deport him, how the hell are they ever going to deal with terrorists?
Well, let me tell you one of the other things that most people don't know, and I'm still trying to get verification. In the amnesty of 1986, to show you how thoroughly screwed up and skewed up, skewed as in twisted, do you know that if a law enforcement officer went to an immigration agent, and, you know, I was part of the drug task force, I had a desk at the FBI and ATF and DEA, and I worked with local and state police, and very often they'd come to you and say, Mike, I need a file on Joe Smith. He's a citizen of Great Britain. We believe he's a drug trafficker. We need a file on whoever, and he's a citizen of Canada or Mexico or Israel or whatever. Because, you know, immigration laws, let me be real clear about this, folks, is not about Mexicans or Latin Americans or Hispanics. The open borders anarchists would have you believe, oh, this is just about going after Latinos. And, yes, we have more illegal aliens in America from Latin America than anywhere else. That's a function of geography. You know, the Rio Grande is a kind of a unique border on the whole planet. It's over 2,000 miles long, and it divides the first world from the third world, so you can imagine how much pressure is on that border. But right now, if I have the statistic correct, I don't want to misspeak because I am very careful about accuracy, but my understanding is that the highest number of lawful immigrants or people coming in on work visas or lawful immigrants based on profession are from Asia. So, you know, the immigration laws are not about being racist or any of this other nonsense that keeps getting spewed all the time. But the problem that we would have is that if an agent would come to me from the FBI and say, Mike, I need to have an immigration file on so-and-so because he's the target of an investigation, my responsibility was to get the file. If I tried to not give that file to that agent, which would never happen, I can't imagine how I could, then you could be prosecuted for obstruction of an investigation, kind of like Benghazi. You know, we want to talk to witnesses. No, you can't talk about obstruction, but that's a story for another day. But now picture this one, Don, and everybody out there. If the person had gotten amnesty, the information in the amnesty file could not be shared with any law enforcement agency. If you were a naturalized American, we had to turn that over. If you came here with a green card because you got married in your home country and immigrated legally and was never out of status and did everything by the book, every scrap of paper in your immigration file would have to be turned over to the FBI or DEA or ATF or the U.S. Marshals Service or local or state police. They need it, you give it to them so they can conduct their investigation. However, if the alien in question was illegally present in the United States for years, applied for amnesty, everything in the amnesty portion of the file, there'd be a big red flag. I mean, you couldn't miss it. If you turned over anything from under the flag to the Bureau, the guy could have been wanted for an act of terrorism. It could have been that he was wanted for killing 15 little girls and chopping their heads off. If you simply took that material and gave it to the Bureau agent because they're trying to get this guy before he kills somebody else, I could have gone to jail and lost my job. Because the law said, under no circumstances can you do this, and then they eventually said, well, with a court order you could do it. But they did so much to protect people who violated our laws, and no one else in America gets that protection. Not a naturalized American, not a native-born American, not a lawful immigrant. But if you violate our borders, then a whole bunch of fences jump up, and we run electricity through the fence. And don't you dare provide that information from a guy who entered and lived and worked illegally in America. You give that to an FBI agent, you're going to find yourself in front of a grand jury. How does that one make you feel, Don?
Well, look, it doesn't surprise me. I was fighting with DHS over Privacy Act, where they were trying to pull on me, well, we can't give you this information because of the Privacy Act on, you know, on the guy who killed Drew.
Now, I got a story for you about that, and I'm glad you raised that.
Well, I said to the guy, the Privacy Act does not cover illegal immigrants. In fact, in the Privacy Act, it specifically excludes them. So put in, you know, writing to me, you know, why you can't do this. So they send me like 20 pages of stuff that meant absolutely nothing. And then the final thing, well, that's our policy. And it's like, well, wait a minute. Agencies can't make policies that override federal law.
But executive orders by the president can, and guess who created that executive order?
Well, I would guess Obama.
Wrong. Ding, 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 ding.
Bush.
George W. Bush and Michael Chertoff.
Okay.
The Privacy Act is only supposed to protect American citizens, whether they're naturalized or born in America.
Right. It's
supposed to protect people with green cards, lawful immigrants. If you're here legally as a student, as a businessman, as a clergyman, you're not covered. Yet, Chertoff turned around and said, you know what? Let's extend the Privacy Act by executive order. And that's what they did, and it was done by George W. Bush. Folks, let's be so clear about this. Both sides of the aisle have gotten America into this predicament.
Oh, look, this guy's girlfriend, I found out when I was actually at his bond hearing, this guy's girlfriend was supposed to be deported in 2006. She had already gone through the process. They ordered her deportation. They didn't detain her. She didn't show up when she was supposed to be deported. They never went looking for her. And she lived in the same house for 10 years. They never even went to her house to try to pick her up. Had she been deported in 2006, you and I would have never met. I wouldn't be on the phone. My son would be alive.
Yep.
So right. Well, I do get annoyed when people, not that I'm happy the way Obama is dealing with immigration either, but when they try to blame it all on him. I mean, I've done enough research. This goes back to Reagan, actually. Not that he started it.
Back to Jimmy Carter, who said we couldn't use the term illegal alien.
Right. So it's pretty much everybody's to blame. Both sides of the aisle are to blame. And, you know, they may do it for different reasons, votes on one side and cheap labor on the other, but...
And they're all doing it for campaign contributions, which in my world are legalized bribes.
That's right. But at the end of the day, it's all the same thing. It all creates the same problem. The reason's irrelevant.
Well, you know, it's just so funny because before you joined me, I was just talking to the audience a little bit. There's a website that posted my interview with Megyn Kelly saying that, you know, I lied, that I'm an anti-immigrant activist, that I worked for the defunct INS as though... the agency is gone, so it's not even relevant. You would almost think you're talking about prohibition, that here's Mike Cutler talking about alcohol from an era of prohibition, but prohibition went away. Well, laws against illegal aliens are on the books, but de facto they have gone away because of this administration having an abject abhorrence for enforcing laws that at their foundation are designed to protect American lives, or actually anybody's lives. You know, the most likely victims of the violence perpetrated by transnational criminals, and again, not just from Latin America, I've raided enough places in the Asian community, the Russian mob, the Jamaican drug posses, every group of people, I don't care if you're from Europe or Asia, Africa, or the Middle East, every group of people has the good, the bad, and the ugly. This isn't about race. It's about criminals. Crime is not the sole deal for one group of people over another. If you think it is, then you're a bigot, and let's call it out. But the remarkable part is you could go to these websites, and immediately they posted my interview. I found it very interesting. And by the way, if you folks are out there from the group, and you know who you are who posted it, you sound upset, which makes my day. If I have upset you or pissed you off, that makes my weekend a little bit more joyous. Because I deal in the truth while the other folks are dealing in lies, accusations. I actually enjoy the accusations because it tells me that maybe I'm getting to them a little bit. As an agent, I was used to hearing foul language directed at me. In the beginning, it bothered me because you like people to treat you nicely. But it didn't take a while before I figured it out. If you can get somebody that upset that they're going to use foul language, then you've probably upset them, and that's a good thing. Look, the immigration laws are not about race. We have to be very clear about it. And Americans need to grow a spine and hold their ground and speak their mind. It's part of the First Amendment. The First Amendment doesn't just say freedom of speech, freedom of press, freedom of religion. Everybody rattles those off. There's two more components, folks. The right to seek redress of grievances and the right for peaceable assemblage. And the Founding Fathers were right. They had a really good idea with that business about the right to peaceable assemblage because they understood that the democratic process can't exist without conversation, argument, debate. All they said is leave your clubs, your knives, and your guns at home and have at it. Practice democracy. As somebody once said, you'd never eat sausage if you saw how they made it. There's nothing neat or clean about an argument. But you can't have a democratic regime or a democratic country without the arguments and without the debates. Don, in point of fact, is a super liberal. Maybe almost progressive. I'm not sure if it's fair to call you that.
I don't even like that. I've never liked the term progressive.
Okay, fine.
I've always been proud of being a liberal, even when everybody was trashing it. So.
Okay, but understand my point. And I'm a registered Democrat. But the open borders crowds would immediately say, oh, that dynamic duo of Cutler and Rosenberg, oh, they're probably right-wing skinheads. The closest I come to being a skinhead, by the way, as my wife likes to remind me, is my growing bald spot. And being a Jew from Brooklyn, she calls it my pink yarmulke. But we're not right-wingers. We're not conservatives. See, immigration isn't a liberal or a conservative issue. It's an American issue. Safety first. Keep out the people who would hurt us. Keep out the people who would provide unfair competition for jobs Americans desperately need. Make certain that we feed our own before we feed the world. I've never seen anybody get criticized, and unfortunately we see these tragedies where some person is dragging their child out of a burning building or an overturned car or whatever, horrible accident, and there may be bunches of people injured or whatever. The instinct is you take your own child out of that wreck first. Nobody would ever say to somebody, how dare you save your own child first? America is supposed to look out for Americans first, just the way that every country is supposed to look out for their own citizens first. But somehow today, in this wacky world of twisted perspectives, when Americans say, let's look out for our fellow Americans of every race, every religion, we need to be colorblind in this country, just look out for Americans first, somehow that becomes hate speech. How in the world is common sense and morality reduced to hate speech? What are your thoughts? Am I getting that wrong, by the way, Don?
No, you know what ends up happening? When somebody doesn't have a good argument back, that's the easiest thing. You're a racist, you're a bigot. I mean, that's the invective to throw at somebody when you can't say anything else. Look, last week when I was testifying in Sacramento on this driver's license bill, I was the only person to speak in opposition. And it was no personal opinion. I was just trying to, as they kept interrupting me, the chair, not the people that were there. I kept just, you know, it was fact after fact from this Department of Motor Vehicles and from Los Angeles Police Department and all these, you know, these things. And in the middle of my testimony, and I've watched it back, but I can't figure out, I was interrupted by a group screaming something. And I'm sure it was probably, you know, bigot or something like that. And it was like the other side, I couldn't even have an argument with them because they never presented anything. They just said, everybody should have driver's licenses. It'll make the road safer. Well, how can you argue somebody who refuses to produce any facts? So, you know, the
kid that says because, and you say, well, why
right.
do you have that
right.
position?
The,
because.
The natural thing. I mean, I've been online and different things, and so you're a bigot. And I'm saying, well, tell me why. Tell me why I'm a bigot, and because you don't want these people to drive, or you don't want them to do this. And, well, that doesn't make me a bigot. I don't care if they drive. In general, it's safety. I'm talking public safety. You're talking illegal immigration. But it's become, you know, two completely different things. And that's what you have to face. And, you know, anybody who has, you know, people who have known me for 30, 40 years, you know, not that it's not a funny laugh, but an ironic laugh that, yeah, right, I'm the bigot. I'm probably more liberal than most of the people that were in that room on
yeah.
most issues. But this issue, you know what? Here's the facts. Facts are not liberal or conservative. Facts are facts.
And you know, there was a woman by the name of Barbara Jordan who was a black lady. She was
from
a
Texas,
very
yeah.
liberal member of Congress. She came up with what became known as the Jordan Commission. And she would stand lockstep with both of us and say, hey, wait a minute. Those immigration laws need to be enforced because Americans are losing their jobs and they're losing their lives. And it's happening in the greatest extent within the ethnic communities, whether it's the black or the Latino community. You know, it's kind of like the lie you hear about this mythical Latino vote. How in the world can someone look at the name Rosenberg? I mean, in your case, I guess you live up to the stereotype.
Yeah.
But when you hear Rosenberg, you think Jew. When you think Jew, you think liberal. Well, guess what? Don's right. There he is. Okay. But there are people I know. I'm going to be on a radio show tomorrow night with Steve Rosenblum. And Steve is a conservative, and yes, he's Jewish. So understand that you have a guy who is a conservative, and he happens to be a Jew, and his name is similar to yours. So
yeah.
How in the world can anybody look at someone's last name? Oh, Rodriguez, we know who you're going to vote for. Rosenberg, Rosenblum, what the heck? It's Rosen something or other. We know you're going to... Isn't that an expression of the ultimate expression of bigotry?
Well, it is, because you're making an assumption that is not based on any fact or knowledge or reality. You're just taking a name. But one of the radio shows that I'm on out here a lot, the producer of the show is Hispanic. And, you know, they're probably more libertarian than conservative, but they hammer away at this issue, and after a couple of times I was on the show, I sent him an email, and I said, you know, how do you feel about all this? And he sent me a nice email back. Basically, he said, what difference does it make? Right is right, and wrong is wrong. And look, I've gotten lots of emails from Hispanic people that are like, you're doing the right thing. What you're doing may save my kid's life. So keep doing it. And, you know, it clearly isn't a black and white issue as to, you know, where you can take somebody's name or nationality or, you know, ethnicity and put them in a column and say, oh, yeah, you must be here. You must be there.
Well, and it really disturbs me because these are the same folks who are quick to yell about bigotry. You know, and I've made this point before, but I'm going to make it again. As a law enforcement officer, if someone does profile, and by the way, profiling is not always wrong. There are times that profiling makes perfect sense. You may have a description of a perpetrator of a crime, and if they say that we're looking for somebody who's between the ages of 20 and 25, and he's about 5'8" to 5'10". And he's got, you know, medium build, and it's a guy, well, immediately you rule out women. Immediately you rule out people that are 48 years old, or you rule out some guy who's 6'3". Your profile, you're looking at a particular appearance. And sometimes it can be a little bit broader. If a police officer knows that there are neighborhoods where drugs are prevalent, and there are those neighborhoods. I've done a lot of street work with the cops over my career. So you have a kid driving into a predominantly black neighborhood, and he's driving a BMW or a Jag or a Porsche, and he shows up in Harlem at 3 o'clock in the morning on a block where they know there's prevalent drug sales. White kid, Porsche, Jersey tags, 3 in the morning in Harlem. What's the likelihood the kid's there to buy drugs? So they're going to pull that kid over. Are they profiling? Absolutely. Are the police justified? You're damn right they are. So that kind of profiling is far more than, oh, he's a white kid, let's stop him. It's situational. White kid, fancy car, out of town, Harlem, 3 in the morning, on a block where we know there's drug activity. There's profiling, but it's based on reason. when you look at the name Rosenberg and say, that's all I need to know about you, you are the worst form of bigot or racist I could imagine. Your thoughts, Don?
Well, you know, you're right on. When I was in, and I'm actually going to trash myself a little bit here.
Don't let me stop you.
There was a huge police commission meeting in Northridge, California, about a year and a half ago in January, that I went to. And I mean, there were literally over 500 people, and they were keeping people out. And there were so many there to speak on the issue of impounding cars. And they were calling people up, you know, like five at a time. So, you know, they'd call five names. And then they called five names, and like four of them were Hispanic names. And I thought to myself, oh, great, here it comes, you know, which was, I guess, being a bit of a bigot till I learned my lesson. Those people got up. They were angrier at what was happening than anybody else.
Yep.
Because they said, you know, one after another, they, you know, well, the comments were, you know, I spent years to come into this country legally, and then I spent years to become a citizen. And they walk through, it's not even just they're walking across the border or they're coming in however they're getting here, but because of what they do, I'm getting blamed for it.
Yep.
My last name's Gonzalez. My last name's Rodriguez. And
yep.
And I'm getting, you know, and yes, they're getting profiled by the police and pulled over. Or as one guy said, I'm losing my job to them because they're willing to work cheaper than I am. And same thing, I'm a citizen here, but, you know, whatever it is. And I was really, I mean, it really taught me a lesson. Don't think just because that's their last name that they're going to necessarily take that position. Look, I'm Jewish and I've been called anti-Semitic.
Yep.
Just because Israel says, oh, this is what we want to do, doesn't mean it's always the right thing, you know. So,
my friend Lou Barletta, the mayor, had been the mayor of Hazleton, Pennsylvania. Now he's Congressman Barletta, one of my few heroes on the Hill, along with Senator Sessions, Senator Grassley, Congressman Steve King. There's a few others. I don't want to say that they're the only good guys on the Hill, but you really have to cast a wide net and look far and wide to find the good guys. Senator Vitter, another good guy. There are people in Washington trying to do the right thing. But Lou and I met because I was his final witness when he got sued by the ACLU for enacting the first town ordinances against illegal immigration. Not because he's bigoted, but because suddenly there was an influx of MS-13, and suddenly this quiet town that hadn't experienced a homicide in years had a couple of them in a span of months, and there were shootings and drug sales. And what's interesting, because I spoke to him before the election, he's now in his second term as a member of Congress. In fact, he was kind enough to treat myself, my wife, and my youngest son to a lunch at the Capitol Hill Club when I testified before the Senate Judiciary Committee back on March 20th. And we were talking about it, and he said, you know, the Latino voters in my town, in my district, the amount of people that vote for me is amazing. They're on my side. They understand why I did what I did. Look, folks, the immigration laws are not about discrimination. My family was hammered during the Holocaust. I'm sure as a Jew, you probably have similar stories. But it's about, and I couldn't enforce laws if they were based on bigotry. They're simply laws that were designed to keep people out. And if you look at Title VIII, for those of you that you've heard this before, don't grab for your pen or your crayon. But if you've never heard this before, look this up. Title 8, United States Code, Section 1182. Those are the categories of aliens who by law are supposed to be kept out of the United States. That's what the inspections process is about. It's about keeping your eye to that proverbial peephole to be careful about who you let into America. And it starts with aliens with dangerous communicable diseases. That harkens back to Ellis Island, which was a quarantine station, by the way, folks. It was run by public health and the immigration authorities to keep out dangerous diseases. So that's item one. Item two, aliens who suffer extreme mental illness and are violent or sex offenders. Then we get to aliens who've been previously deported, aliens who are criminals. And among the criminals, we're talking about drug dealers, gang members, money launderers, gun runners, people who've committed theft and rape, arson, murder, manslaughter, armed robbery. That's what we're talking about. And then we get to aliens who are spies and terrorists, human rights violators, war criminals. And finally, you get to aliens who would live here without authority, taking jobs Americans need, becoming public charges, and so forth. So if somebody runs the border, refuses to present himself or herself for inspection, doesn't go through the process, the obvious reason is that person knows if they dig into my background, they're going to find a legitimate reason to keep me out. Yeah, it might be that the guy is simply poor and can't work legally here, so that's why he's doing it. And many times that is the case. And, of course, that leads to identity theft, and anyone who has suffered that will tell you it's not a victimless crime. But it also may well be that that person committed a heinous crime in his country or some other country, and he's on the run from law enforcement. I've arrested loads of people like that in my career. So have my colleagues. Maybe the guy committed a felony and was deported and came back. We found a guy working in a glass factory. It was mind-boggling, Don. I told one of our guys who was fresh out of the academy, I think it was his first or second day on the street, right out of the academy. PJ is a huge big guy, happens to be a black guy. I think he was originally from Panama, naturalized citizen, football player. And I said, I don't care how big you are, you never know who we're arresting. Well, that day we went into a factory. We arrested a guy as a suspected illegal alien. The guy spoke great English. He was from British Honduras, as I recall. He had been deported because he was found guilty, or he pleaded guilty, to manslaughter. I believe the guy committed a murder. He did a bunch of years in jail. He was in great physical shape, but he was a little bit of a guy. He was like half the size of this guy, PJ, but he was very muscular. And first he claimed to be an American, and then the story started to fall apart. So we brought him in for questioning. Turned out he had done time for manslaughter. We deported him. He came back illegally. He was discovered here. He was sitting in a federal penitentiary serving a jail sentence for unlawful reentry, this convicted killer. And guess what? He escaped from the federal penitentiary. We found him working in a factory. So when people are here illegally, you don't know what's in their background, and what you don't know can get you hurt. That's what those laws are about. So when you hear this nonsense, oh, Mike Cutler, anti-immigrant, Don Rosenberg, terrible bigot, we don't want people to suffer the way that Don's family suffered. I lived through 9/11 in New York. I was watching the terrible bombing in Boston. It brought back 9/11 in my mind. You look at the death, the destruction of a little eight-year-old boy, the people missing limbs. You say to yourself, my God, this could have been prevented if immigration had been on top of its game and recognized the fact that the Tsarev family, apparently, and again, I'm not making an accusation, but apparently did questionable things about political asylum. What do I mean by that? Well, they were granted political asylum. The only way to get political asylum in America, folks, is to tell the immigration authorities that you have a credible fear of facing persecution and severe circumstances if you're forced to go back to your country because of your race, your religion, your ethnicity, or your political beliefs. So that's how you get political asylum, and that's reasonable. The Tsarnaev family gets political asylum. We can't go back to Russia. They're going to do terrible things to us. And as soon as they got lawful status in the United States, they got green cards. Where do they go? Back to Russia. That's a big, juicy flag. That's a flare gun being fired into the air. Boom, the big red flare just burst in the sky. Hey, you got to look at these folks. They asked for political asylum. They said they can't go home. And we sooner give them green cards or whatever, and then they hop on an airplane and they go back to the country that they said they could not return to. Doesn't that sound like maybe they lied? What do you think, Don?
Yeah, I don't want to. Yeah, I guess they allegedly lied.
Well,
but, yeah,
it's certainly questionable. Let's put it this way: it's something someone should be digging into as a possibility. I'm not saying it's definite.
Yeah,
maybe there are circumstances. Maybe some guy that wanted to get them, you know, died a week later. I don't know. But what I'm saying is, as an investigator, if I was handed that case, I would start to look at the possibility that they lied
right
on the application.
It's clearly a big, bright red flag that says there's something wrong here. This makes no sense. and look,
yeah,
the area.
Yeah, we've seen this time and again.
You know, well, look, in my case, which was nowhere near anything as complicated, everybody from now I know, from immigration to the DMV to the San Francisco District Attorney's Office multiple times, had an opportunity to stop all of this. And they never did. Nobody had to do anything heroic. All they had to do was their job.
Wow, could you imagine? Well, I mean, but that's the problem. And
but,
look at the impediments being put in the way of the – look at the agents that are now suing the DHS so they can be allowed to do their job.
No, I know. I mean, I spoke to Chris Crane, the president of the – you know, ICE.
You'll have to give me his contact information. Look, this is really a problem, folks. And that's why I get so darn angry. I hear people say, well, the unions are lousy. And it was funny over at TSA. Well, if they unionize, imagine what that's going to mean. Let me tell you what, folks, and this is the liberal Mike Cutler speaking. My dad was a construction worker. I'm a labor guy. You know, we tend to acquire our political orientation the way we acquire our religion, at least during our formative years, from our families. My parents were dyed-in-the-wool Democrats. They passed away in the 60s. Back then, the Democratic Party was the Democratic Party. It was the Democrat Party of Truman and JFK. It was the party that looked out for blue-collar workers, for school teachers, for postal workers. And I hear people say to me, well, the unions are lousy. Well, yes, some unions really are lousy. They're looking to bring in more foreign workers, even illegal ones, so they can inflate their numbers and get more union dues so they get political leverage and money. Those people in those unions are not serving their members. They're serving themselves, just like the politicians. But you, and people have said to me, well, could you imagine, you know, police being unionized? New York City Police Department is unionized. The PBA, the Policemen's Benevolent Association, is the union that represents the cops. And you know what? The cops need it. Because, and your dad, I remember, was a cop in New Jersey.
Yep.
When you're out there with a gun and a badge, you've got no friends. And if you're involved in an incident, increasingly, you're in trouble. In the old days, if a cop shot somebody, it was kind of a done deal, and that was that. It's not that way today, and that's fine. I believe there has to be accountability. If you give somebody a gun and say to them, you have the power of life and death over people when you're at work, just like a doctor can be sued for malpractice, law enforcement officers need to be made accountable for the actions they take and don't take and the way they take their actions. So I'm all for it. But we know that in this litigious climate, if you have a gun and a badge, accusations are going to fly. I was lucky. I had a 30-year career, never had any accusations lodged against me. I was scrupulously careful. But part of it is just dumb luck of not running into the wrong guy on the wrong day who has a lawyer who's looking to create a nightmare for you. So you need to be unionized. But here is the union sounding the alarm. And they're not complaining that their people are working too hard, okay? So for you folks out there that don't like unions, get over it. Chris Crane and the American Federation of Government Employees, which I guess they're part of, I think they are, that's what I used to belong to, in fact, as an immigration agent, they're trying to serve the American public. They understand the importance of the immigration laws that they're desperately trying to enforce. They filed a lawsuit, folks, not because their people didn't want to work or they wanted different hours. They filed a lawsuit because they are disgusted that they are being kept from enforcing the laws that are on the books. That's why when Obama said he was invoking prosecutorial discretion to give unknown hundreds of thousands or more likely millions of illegal aliens employment authorization and lawful status, I said that what he called prosecutorial discretion in reality was prosecutorial deception. You know, I believe that law enforcement has to be a triage. You will never have enough law enforcement officers for any area of law, for any jurisdiction. It's always a game of very few people, that thin blue line, trying to protect the great majority of people. But you do it through deterrence. So you say, okay, when a cop watches you drive through his radar trap, and the speed limit is posted at 60, and you're going 67, and the road is clear and sunny, and there's no water on the road, and you're not tailgating, he's not going to stop you, probably. In New York, they certainly won't. Did you violate the law? Yes. Were you speeding? Yes. He doesn't stop you. Why? Because prosecutorial discretion. Yeah, that guy in that car, the car's in good shape, everything seems to be okay, there's nobody near him, cool. You come through there at 85 miles an hour, and now you got a real problem. And he wants to be ready for the guy doing 85, not the guy doing 65. So, prosecutorial discretion. But to give people lawful status when the law doesn't justify it goes beyond saying we don't want to waste precious resources on people who aren't a serious problem. This is going in a direction that goes way beyond prosecutorial discretion to take authority to give lawful status that the law doesn't have a provision for. That makes a mockery of the law. And that's what the union is fighting and saying, no, this doesn't make sense. You can't do that. And my understanding is that the initial finding of the judge, and it's not over yet, but apparently he's starting to look in that direction, that this was certainly well beyond the pale and an overreach by the administration. So you've got the union fighting to help their people do a better job for all of us. You have a problem with the union, I'll take it up with you. You can call in next week and we'll have that conversation. Chris Crane, if you're listening, I thank you for your efforts as a former agent and as an American citizen, because those laws are there to protect us. If the laws had been enforced properly, if they had investigated the fraud, if we kept out the bad guys, 9/11 wouldn't have happened. Okay? If we had done our job, and when I say our job, because in my mind I'm still back in the old days when I was working as an agent, if immigration did its job, the Boston attack would not have happened. If we had done our job, Don's son would be alive today. We have got to be clear about this with the politicians, folks, and we have to grow a spine. We're paying a hell of a price. We're bleeding red and green. The red being the blood, obviously, of people dying because of the terrorists and criminals and so forth. The green, it's costing us a ton of money that we can't afford to spend. We have to take care of Americans and people who abide by the law. The immigration laws were enacted to protect the lives and jobs of Americans. It's not unreasonable to demand that our government lives up to its obligation. It's supposed to be a government by the people, of the people, for the people. It isn't when it kowtows to the Chamber of Commerce, the Immigration Lawyers Association. Oh, and by the way, and you're going to love this, Don, just like the last time, comprehensive reform, guess who would have to pay for the attorney fees for the illegal aliens?
Yeah, raise your hand.
Raise your hand, folks. If you're paying taxes, they're sticking you with the check. If you're here legally, by the way, and you never violate the law, you go to a lawyer, you're going to pay for it. If you run our borders, violate our laws, and commit identity theft, and do a whole bunch of other stuff, guess what? You're getting a free lawyer. Oh, and if you belong to a gang, there's good news. All you have to do is promise that you won't do it anymore, and you're getting a green card. That's exactly what's in the law. You can't make this up. You cannot make this up. And the gangsters, the eight gangsters, as I call them, are telling us that this is a compromise. The only thing that's being compromised, folks, is national security and the safety and future of Americans and their families. How does all this matter? I don't know if you were aware of all of these features to this fabulous legislation, Don.
Well, some of it. I mean, I haven't read the 844 pages, but I keep seeing little bits and pieces of stuff.
We have to get the Cliff Notes version, I think.
Yeah, or just sit down and read the whole thing, because it's, you know, there's so many ridiculous things in there. But look, it's ridiculous already. My tax dollars paid to defend the guy who killed my son. And to that end, I really, you know, I believe everybody should have some representation. But it was so, you know, the process was so abused between, you know, all the attorneys, the translators,
How does the word egregious sound to you?
Egregious is a good one. You know, he's in Honduras now, and they're still appealing his case for killing my son. The court, in California, you have 30 days to say you're going to file an appeal, which would have been the end of August. Then you have 40 days to actually file the appeal, which would have been the end of October. And it's now May, and extension. And, you know, they're still trying to file an appeal on this guy, which is totally irrelevant to his return. But it's, you know, who's paying for that? I'm paying for that. You're paying for that. Anybody in this case, anybody who's a California resident is paying for this. And it's, you know, it's like, yeah, you had your appeal rights. I lost my appeal rights because the district attorney's office filed the appeal on the preliminary hearing in the wrong court. Did they do anything to try to fix it? No. This guy now has had, what are we up to, 8, 9, 10 months for something that he's supposed to get 40 days? But the courts keep saying, oh, okay, more and more. So they filed another extension, and that's where it sits right now. The judge said he wouldn't grant another extension, but now been a month. It's been a month since the guy asked for another extension, and he hasn't rejected it yet. Meanwhile, he's gotten that extension because nobody's acted on it. It's absolutely absurd that, you know, and the fact is he didn't have a driver's license to begin with. So,
well, and you know, what galls me is the folks that are in favor of, and by the way, understand that there's a couple of other problems with driver's licenses. A driver's license identifies the person. It's the de facto national identity document. If you're talking about an illegal alien who gets an identity document, and it may not even be his name, what you're doing is helping the bad guys to acquire a false identity with legitimate documents. Think of the national security implications. There was an article in the Washington Times and this website that referenced me today. It's cute. I kind of enjoyed it. It made me giggle. The Washington Times wrote an article. The approval rate for these deferred action cases, these so-called childhood arrivals, which have up till age 31 to file lots of – how would anybody prove when they went to high school? There's no biometric. If I walked in someplace and said, yeah, I went to such and such high school, how do you prove it? You know, I graduated 12 years ago. There's no fingerprint. You can't run Mike Cutler's fingerprints, and it comes back to, oh, yeah, Mike Cutler went to Abraham Lincoln High School. There it is. We see it. It doesn't work that way. All you got to do is find the name of some guy who went to the school and claimed to be that guy. So, I mean, and they're not even bothering to look, I'm sure. They don't care. It's about just giving everybody whatever they want. So you're giving people official identity documents, possibly in false names. They're doing it with deferred action cases without even a face-to-face interview. You mail in the documents. You fill out the questionnaire. You give them the money. They send you an identity document in the mail that you can immediately use to apply for a driver's license, a social security card, credit cards, open a bank account, own property, get a job, get on board an airplane, walk into a government office building. Think about the way that we're giving away the keys to the kingdom to people who could lie about who they are and get away with the lie.
Half of those people honestly may not even know their real name.
You know, it was so funny. I was sitting next to this ACLU attorney at this Senate Judiciary Committee hearing, and you could watch the video. It was a remarkable hearing. And he's talking about a client that they represented who he claimed was mentally deficient and didn't know who he was because he had multiple names and multiple dates of birth. Well, the guy might have been mentally deficient. As an agent, I have met some people that either were born that way or suffered head trauma or whatever, where they were walking around in a case of total confusion. But you also find lots of people who will give you multiple false names. One of the wackiest cases, I will tell you, we're getting close to the end of the show, but it was a remarkable case. You can't make it up. I was up at the FBI. We were working on, I believe the guy was a Colombian. He was either a Colombian or a Dominican drug trafficker. And he was the guy running the organization. And I remember his first name was Freddie. We weren't sure what his last name was. And the police arrested him. They spotted the car that he was seen driving around in, and they were getting near the car. And all of a sudden, this guy just shows up, and the cops knew there was a warrant on him. They cuffed him up, and away he went. And he was sitting in the interrogation room with members of the police department and the FBI, and they're asking him for his name. So he gave them a name, and he gave them a date of birth. They said, well, how old are you? Well, his age didn't match his date of birth. If he was truly born in the year he said that he was, he would have been, let's say, 35 years old, but he claimed he was 30 years old. So something was wrong. So the guy gave him a different date of birth with a different month and a different day. Well, that didn't work either. So we gave him a third date of birth, and I'm standing there watching this charade. And finally, the bureau agent was exasperated, the FBI agent. He says, you better tell me the truth. When were you born? Who are you really? Your name doesn't match the parents' names that you've given us. Your date of birth doesn't match your age. And the guy looks at the agent laughing up his sleeve, and he said, ha, he said, I was born at a young age. I just don't remember. And everybody in the room went nuts. But I had the inside track on this knucklehead. And this is where immigration comes in, folks. This is why immigration is so darn important. When they ran fingerprints, but nobody had noticed, was it indicated he had been previously deported, came back, did time for unlawful reentry, and was now looking at up to 20 years in jail for unlawful reentry, a law that I worked with Senator D'Amato to create in the mid-'80s. So I walked in and said, listen, Freddie, I don't know what your real name is, but I do know you were deported. I do know you did time for reentry. I do know we deported you again. So I don't care if you beat the drug charge. I got you for a 20-year felony. And the arrogant guy was literally, I kid you not, Don, reduced to tears. I went to his sentencing. And they combined the immigration criminal charge with the drug charge. He was sentenced to 13 years behind bars. He would be getting out this year, by the way. So I was in the courtroom, and I watched this guy literally fall apart when he was sentenced to 13 years. And I did what I always like to do. I walked up to him in the courtroom, and I told him that he should make believe he was having a nice day. But understand the significance of the immigration laws, folks. It's an effective tool that we should not be giving up. We need to hire more immigration agents. We need to enforce the laws that are designed to protect lives and the jobs of American workers. It is a betrayal of America and Americans for any politician to create a sanctuary city, a sanctuary state, or be voted into Congress, and then blithely tell people, I'm going to work hard to make sure that if you're here illegally, we'll make you a citizen. And you know what's remarkable? You were talking about people you know who are Latino who lost their jobs. When we enacted, or the Congress enacted, comprehensive reform, and we had to take care of it, it was called the Immigration Reform and Control Act of 86. It controlled nothing, by the way. You know who was calling up to complain about illegal aliens working on the job? The aliens who had gotten lawful status. And this is something else nobody talks about. So as soon as they got the magic card, they went to their boss Monday morning, bright-eyed and all excited, and they said, hey, Charlie, I'm going to keep working for you, but not for $5 an hour. Prevailing wage for my job is $11.50, and by the way, you need to pay me on the books, and I want you to take out workman's comp. And by the way, you have safety issues. You have the fire escape blocked. You've got to make sure there's a safe way out of the building if there's a fire. And you know what the boss said to these people? You're fired.
Right.
Who replaced them? The second wave of illegal aliens. And those are among the people that are now out there demanding the right to be given citizenship. These are the folks who took the jobs of the newly legalized back in 86. And back then we were told, number one, it was a one-time deal. Number two, it would involve a little over a million. We wound up with between 3.5 and 4 million. And many of those people lost their jobs, went on unemployment, because they were not willing to work for substandard wages under substandard conditions, because now they were here legally, they couldn't be exploited. And the bum bags who were exploiting them before simply said, I need to get new exploitable workers. So they hired the next wave, and here we go again.
The same thing will happen. You know, I just read an article in the L.A. Times. It was about two different guys, one guy who, you know, hires illegals, and I think it was Tennessee, but I'm not positive, and the other guy who goes through the actual process, which costs them a lot of money and a lot of time, and he's had pretty much the same people, you know, year after year after year, and he, you know, it makes it hard for him to compete, but he wants to do the right thing for himself, and he wants to do the right thing for the people that work for him. And he's been doing this for a long time, because he said in 86, after the amnesty, within 2 years, every single person that had worked for him was gone. They went, you know, he doesn't know where they went. They all disappeared. And, you know, he had to start the whole process all over again. Because look, you know, a lot of these people get legalized, if they've learned a trade, maybe it's, you know, putting down tile or, you know, carpentry or whatever it is, they can get a decent raise, but still getting paid less than the person who's, you know, who's a citizen. And now all of a sudden, the company that wouldn't hire anybody illegally, but now the guy's legal, and he said, why should I pay $30 an hour? This guy will work for $15.
And that's why the Chamber of Commerce is applying tremendous pressure for this.
Oh, yeah.
This is why I don't get how this is a conservative issue. You know, when I was a kid and we learned about labor law and the unions and the beginnings of the AFL and the CIO and how they merged and George Meany and all those other guys, right? We all studied this. There were strike breakers that were given the very unflattering title of scab labor, people that would cross the picket line to take the jobs when people were unionizing and striking for better conditions and reasonable wages. We are importing scab labor, and you're told that you're a right-wing nut if you think that this is fair? Look, the wage of American workers is in decline. Rather than Mexico seeing in America a role model, America is now making a full-court press at trying to emulate Mexico, and the result won't be pretty. You will either be very wealthy. The Chuck Schumers of the world will have so much money he won't know where to shovel it all. The Alan Greenspans of the world will have so much money they won't know where to put it. But the average schmo who's working in a factory will find that rather than getting a pay raise next year, he's probably going to lose money, lose benefits, which Obamacare may also hasten, because I know there are employers saying, hey, you know, I'm not going to hire people full-time anymore, because if I have more than 50 people, I have to pay all this extra money for health insurance. So we're putting incredible pressure on the American worker and his family. How in the world is this going to help America continue in its role of leadership? And when you look at the thug countries that are out there, and if you look at what's happening in the Middle East right now, the Middle East is really heating up. If America isn't out there to lead the charge for decency, democracy, and freedom, we're in trouble. If America becomes weak and falters, it's not just America that stands to suffer, it's the entire world that stands to suffer. And the greed of these corporations and the Chamber of Commerce and all these other knuckleheads, the banks, is taking us down a very dangerous path. Immigration, again, I'll say it, folks, isn't a single issue, but a singular issue, because of how it impacts everything, from national security and wages, the economy, education, healthcare, the environment. We need to secure the border, not keep out the whole world, that's nonsense, but to be able to have control over a system. Right now, we are admitting over 1 million lawful immigrants every year. That means almost 100,000 green cards per month. These are workers and potential workers. Even if you're talking about children, give them enough years and God willing, they will grow up and become workers. So we are admitting close to 100,000 workers every month, or potential workers, and we're admitting tens of thousands of foreign workers with temporary work visas, so-called, They're only temporary because no one lives forever, because no one's making sure these people leave in any meaningful numbers. So we are bringing in more foreign workers than the number of jobs we're creating, even before you consider the illegals who are coming across the border or violating the terms of their visas. We really need to be strong on this, folks. Please go out there. If you're listening to my program, I'm thrilled to be joining you Friday evening. But armed with the information and the perspectives that I try to provide on the program, that Don has been kind enough in the midst of the fires raging not far from his home to get on the radio with me this evening, take the information and do something worthwhile with it. Please contact your elected representatives, your members of Congress, the U.S. Senate, people on the state and local level. Talk to them about sanctuary cities. Talk to them about fairness. Talk to them about their political future if they get voted out of office, because people will be angry enough to say they've had enough of this nonsense. You know, you go to a restaurant, you need to be specific about the food you want to eat, the way you want it prepared. I ask you to do the same with your elected representatives. Don, final thoughts from you as we get close to the bottom of the hour.
Well, all I'm hoping is that the truth will start to come out, which has a lot to do with what you were just saying. You got to ask these people questions and force them to give you a good answer, because right now, just watching what's going on, is people are being told a lot of things that aren't true. And unfortunately, this is one of those things, you know, you can raise taxes and then you can lower them. Once you make everybody legal, the game's over.
Yep.
You can't then go back in reverse. So this thing shouldn't go through quickly. There should be a lot of discussion on it. And it really is incumbent upon, you know, the people to demand some better answers. Because as you were just saying, you know, with jobs, I mean, I'm listening to these guys, oh, if we make all these people legal, wages will go up. Well, how does that possibly happen?
Isn't that remarkable? They just say it, and then there's no way of explaining it, but it's by faith. There's no good faith here.
It's just faith. And look, my party for my lifetime, the Democrats, are up in arms over all the jobs that are being outsourced for cheap labor, but then have no problem importing cheap labor.
That's right.
So, you know, and the
Republicans... But you know why they're outraged, don't you? They don't get campaign contributions from overseas.
Well, they probably do. You just don't
know. You might actually. You're right. You might have me there, Don.
You know, you just don't know. But look, even the Republicans. Again, today there was an article in the paper about a couple of farmers in, outside of Los Angeles, well, somewhere in California. I don't even know where they were. And they were talking about how, you know, they can't get any Americans to do the job, but that, you know, they, of course, never got into the wage issue, that, you know, what they're willing to pay. And they were specifically described themselves as conservative Republicans. Well, conservative Republicans believe in the free market. There is a wage at which Americans will do any job.
Yep.
So pay it. If it's going to cost $20 an hour to pick strawberries, then pay $20 an hour. If it's going to cost
what's remarkable, there was a story that ran not long ago in The Atlantic about it, maybe a year or two ago, about the living conditions on the tomato farms. You have aliens living literally in the back of pickup trucks, camper trucks.
It's terrible. This is 21st
century. They're defecating in the field. You wonder why periodically you will hear about an E. coli outbreak or salmonella. What's happening are the health conditions on the farms are like a third world country. American migrant workers look at that and they say, are you kidding me? You think I'm going to sleep in the back of a camper truck with no heat and take a cold shower? And half the time when they make dinner for these folks, it's worse than prison food, and they run out of food before everybody eats. What American is going to live under those conditions?
Well, first of all, no one should. This is 21st
but
century
that's my
slavery.
Point. But that's my point. So if you think that this is what America should reduce itself to in the year 2013, to slavery de facto, so that some farmer could maximize his profits and inflict suffering on innocent people who just want to get by and live. then you better get your brain readjusted.
Right. It's terrible from every single angle for everybody who's involved in it, and that our government will look the other way and let these people. I mean, even if you were going to say, we're letting them in the country, well, then at least treat them like human beings.
And what happens is they go back to their home country knowing they were treated like dogs. I had them say this to me. And do you think that they think Americans are the good people we want them to believe? We're so concerned about how people think about us. You know, if you wonder how the Hugo Chavez's of the world come to power, if you have enough people come to America, be treated like that, and then they go back to their home country, and one of their leaders stands up and says, I'm going to kick America in the butt, he's got their vote.
Yep.
We are acting against our own best interests. We are acting against the best interest of any civilized person. Folks, America should expect better of itself and of its people and of its companies. We need to be involved, actively involved. We have abdicated our responsibility. My dad used to say that at the end of the day, I would teach people how they should treat me by demonstrating consistently what I was willing to accept. You know, I always like to make the point that democracy is not a spectator sport. These issues should infuriate all of us, should cause all of us to become involved. Show as much concern for what's happening with your own government as you do with the game shows and who's going to win the World Series and all this other business, because America's future, your children's future, their children's future, are all hanging in the balance. We saw an act of terrorism in Boston, and yes, it's only a small percentage of aliens, legal or otherwise, who would do something like that, who would commit crime. But we need to make certain that we take reasonable measures that these things don't keep happening. That's why we have immigration laws and borders. Immigration fraud not being discussed at all. This nonsense story that once the Mexican border is secure, we're good to go. Well, let me tell you, folks, you could have had every American standing shoulder to shoulder, linking arms on the Mexican border, and the Boston attack still would have happened. No different, because these folks didn't run the border. They gamed the visa process. There isn't a single word in 800-odd pages of BS that they call comprehensive reform that begins to deal with it. The only fraud that they're concerned with is if someone abuses an alien by claiming to be a lawyer and isn't. There's nothing in there about making certain that the system by which they would process arguably tens of millions of illegal aliens who cannot or will not prove who they are, not a single word that I have seen that they're going to do anything to create any sort of integrity in a process that will literally hand out the keys to America's front door. Even if we secure the border, if you give people green cards, they could walk right across that border. Border security is nonsense. The immigration system, as I said when I was with Megyn Kelly just yesterday, is kind of like a boat with a bunch of holes in it, and they're plugging none of those holes. We know where the boat's going to wind up. Folks, please take what I ask you to do seriously and what Don is asking you to do this week, because Congress is coming back, and they're going at it with a vengeance. You must let them know that you expect better of them than the garbage called comprehensive immigration reform, which I have similarly called the Terrorist Assistance and Facilitation Act. We're at the bottom of the hour, folks. I thank you for spending Friday with both me and Don. Have a wonderful weekend, folks. Remember, democracy is not a spectator sport. Go to michaelcutler.net, talkborder.com, or capsweb.org. See you next week. Thank you, Don.
Thanks a lot, Mike. Yeah, I gotta hop in the shower and go to a dance.
Good weekend, man.